एवं
एवं
सा वीरा प्रवरा संयोजात्मानम् आत्मने ब्रह्मभूतो दृढं काले तत्याज एवं सवीर प्रवरा संयोजात्मानमात्मने ब्रह्मभूत दृढं काले तत्याज स्वं कलेवरम् एवं दस सह Vira Prabhara, the chief of the heroes, Samyoja, applying,
Atmanam,
mind,
Atmani,
unto the super soul,
Brahmabhuta,
being liberated,
Dridham,
firmly,
Kale,
in due course of time.
Tatyaja,
gave up.
Swam,
Om.
Kalevaram,
body. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. In due course of time, when Prithu Maharaj was to give up his body, he fixed his mind firmly upon the lotus feet of Krishna. And thus, completely situated on the Brahmabhuta platform, he gave up the material body. Please repeat. In due course of time, when Prithu Maharaj was to give up his body,
he fixed his mind firmly
upon the lotus feet of Krishna.
And thus,
completely situated on the Brahmabhuta platform, he gave up the material body. Purport. According to a Bengali proverb, whatever spiritual progress one makes in life will be tested at the time of death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is also confirmed, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tamivaiti konte sadatad bhava bhavita. Those who are practicing Krishna consciousness know that their examination will be held at the time of death. If one can remember Krishna at death, he is immediately transferred to Goloka Vrindavan, or Krishna Loka, and thus his life becomes successful. Prithu Maharaj, by the grace of Krishna, could understand that the end of his life was near, and thus he became very jubilant and proceeded to completely give up his body on the Brahma-Buddha stage by practicing the yogic process. It is thoroughly described in the following verses how one can voluntarily give up this body and return home back to Godhead. The yogic process practiced by Prithu Maharaj at the time of death accelerates the giving up of this body while one is in sound health physically and mentally. Every devotee desires to give up the body while it is sound physically and mentally. This desire was also expressed by King Kulashekara in his Mukunda Mala Stotra. Krishna tvadiya padavankaja panjarantam adyaivame vishatu manusa rajahamsa prana prayana samaye kahavata pittai kantha varodhana vidho smaranam putaste. King Kulashekara wanted to give up his body while in a healthy state, and he thus prayed to Krishna to let him die immediately while he was in good health and while his mind was sound. When a man dies, he is generally overpowered by mucus and bile, and thus he chokes. Since it is very difficult to vibrate any sound while choking, it is simply by Krishna's grace that one can chant Hare Krishna at the time of death. However, by situating oneself in the Muktasana position, a yogi can immediately give up his body and go to whatever planet he desires. A perfect yogi can give up his body whenever he desires through the practice of yoga. ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्. So, a very powerful purport here by Srila Prabhupada, speaking in no uncertain terms, quite intense statements, somewhat radical, one might say, from a normal societal perspective. For one thing, he's saying, as a very strong reminder for us, he says, those who are practicing Krishna consciousness know that their examination will be held at the time of death. Okay, so the nature of our examination has already been announced. The time and place, we don't know. But what we will have to face, that we know already. Okay? So in some sense, it's kind of a partial pop quiz or exam. We don't know the time and place, but we know what we'll have to face. And then another thing Prabhupada says here, every devotee desires to give up the body while it is sound physically and mentally. So also another, if you think about it, most people in this world hope to extend the duration of life as far as possible. And it's normal, it's the average person normally, even if they're very old and invalid and decrepit and the body is really falling apart, and there's very little hope, still we want to try to extend it, pull it out as far as possible. This is kind of normal. And so do the family members, with various means of life support now available and so forth. People want to get every last moment available for living in this particular body. So Prabhupada's statement here is quite radical in that sense, quite strong, in which he's saying every devotee, he says, wants to give up their body when it is physically sound and mentally sound, physically healthy. And that means early. That means before the fag end as far as we can drag it out. So I want to talk a little bit about these two statements here. There's a very nice dialogue in Plato's Republic. Not in the Republic, actually. It's another dialogue in Plato's writings, in which the question that Socrates is discussing, Socrates was Plato's guru, and Plato was writing about the dialogues of Socrates. The question that Socrates is discussing with his people is the question, how do we know when a person is happy? That a person has lived a happy life. What is the definition of happiness? How do we know someone is happy? And so all his, his conversational partners, discussants, interlocutors, they're all coming up with various kinds of suggestions. And someone says, well, if a person is very rich, that person is happy. And they quickly shoot that one down with several counterexamples of people who are very rich. Even in that time, apparently, rich people were not always happy. Then they gave some healthy examples of people. Someone says, oh, someone who's very healthy and powerful, strong in body, that person is happy. And they give counterexamples and so forth. Various kinds of examples given of common conceptions of what happiness is. And each one is shot down with various kinds of counterexamples. And in the end, they decide that the only way to tell if a person has lived a happy life is after you see how they die. Because one could live a wonderful, brilliant life and then suffer the death of a dog. It could be a horrible, painful, miserable death. And then you look back and that last moment is a moment of frustration, intense pain, intense suffering. And from the perspective of that person in their last moment, their life looks very miserable. Because they're going through a very, very miserable experience. And so the decision was, well, only after you see how a person dies can you tell how that person has lived. What the quality of that person's life is like. So this point is very important for our Krishna consciousness here, and very similar to what Srila Prabhupada is saying. Namely, everything we do in Krishna consciousness is meant to prepare us for this one final moment, the moment of death. There's a very beautiful verse earlier on in the Bhagavatam in Canto 2, which tells us, Etavan Sankhya Yoga Bhyam Swadharma Parinishthaya, Janma Labhas Savai Pungsam, no, Janma Labhas Para Pungsam, Ante Narayana Smriti. This last phrase Prabhupada quotes very often in his lectures, Ante Narayana Smriti. That the benefit, the goal received, the perfection of everything one might do in life, Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam, through the method of Sankhya, or scientific measurement of matter and spirit, or the practice of yoga, or Swadharma Parinishthaya, by performing one's duties perfectly in this world. Our duties is towards our family, towards our society, towards our country, towards everyone. The perfection, the highest perfection one can achieve by this in one's life, Janmalabhas, Para Pungsam, the highest, is Ante Narayana Smriti, remembering Lord Narayana at the end of our life. And that's the ultimate perfection that one can achieve from all of these things put together, is remembering Krishna at the end of our life. Now, that's not a very easy task. The moment of death is one of such great intensity that it doesn't compare to anything, any other experience we have in this world. It's a difficult proposition preparing for death, because there is no practice, so to speak. You can't, you know, like if you take an examination in school, then you're doing the same problem sets over and over and over again as homework assignments. And then you expect that something similar will show up on the final exam. And if it doesn't, then people complain to the professor and say, this is unfair, and, you know, this is much more difficult than we ever covered in class, and so forth. But the nature of the final exam of death is such that it's, by its very nature, it's completely unlike any other experience. Some things approximating it, maybe some people might get close to it, but the moment of death itself, when the soul is being torn away from everything it knows and everything it feels, and all the senses are shutting down one by one, there's nothing like that. There's no experience like that. And so the preparation becomes all the more important. It becomes all the more significant, because we don't know exactly what that experience feels like. And it has to be such that it's practically automatic. It's practically so well ingrained, so well practiced, that we can do it almost without thinking. Because everything shuts down. Right? The mind and the intelligence, they're also being torn away, right, from this physical material body. Right? The senses obviously are shutting down. So if we depend for our Krishna consciousness on the senses being healthy and vital, well, that won't be there. Right? If we depend on our Krishna consciousness for our mind to be peaceful, our intelligence, that also may not be there. But Krishna has to be so deeply embedded in our heart, so deeply embedded in the heart itself, that regardless of what goes wrong with all our material body, whether physical or subtle, right, whether we're mentally sound or not, what if we get dementia and we you know, lose our mental capabilities to think clearly? It means the intelligence and the mind are not working properly in this body. But it's okay. Krishna has to be so deeply embedded in the core of the heart that to remember him becomes natural. And Prabhupada explains this phrase, Narayana Smriti, as constant remembrance of Narayana, a deep remembrance of Lord Narayana. This, if we can cultivate in our life, where Krishna is so deeply embedded in our hearts that we don't have to make any extraneous endeavor to remember him, right, then we can hope that the same similar thing will happen at the time of death. Now, this is of course very difficult. It's not so easy. One devotee, he told me this story about how he was driving a car in the passenger's side. Someone else was driving, and he was in the passenger seat, and they were going down the motorway or the highway, and he was chanting his rounds, trying to be as conscious, be as intent as possible in the chanting of his rounds, feeling very good about his chanting and so forth. And then all of a sudden, something unexpected happened on the highway. And the driver had to slam on the brakes like really sounded right. So the car skidded in its spun. And he said, I was chanting all along, and the moment this happened, my bead bag and everything were on the floor, and both hands were on the dashboard, and I said, ah! And that was it. So he felt very bad inside. He said, you know, here I was trying to focus my mind on Krishna, and then Krishna gave me the moment, kind of as a little, you know, pop quiz or test, and said, look, you know, try this. And the moment came, and it went, and I couldn't remember Krishna. Right? He said, everything lost. My bead bag on the floor, my hands on the dashboard, my brain shut down. Krishna, I couldn't remember Krishna. So, this takes a lifetime of practice, of course, remembering Krishna like this. But there's also another side of things, namely, our own capability may be very weak or hampered in many ways. Whether it's because our mind and intelligence are not functioning properly at the time of death, or because we're physically in a lot of pain, or because we have a lot of distraction, or it happens in a very inopportune circumstance. So our own capability may be very limited, despite our practice. But there's another element, another side to that remembrance, which Prabhupada is mentioning here in the purport also. And that's the mercy of Krishna. Krishna's own desire to bring the living entity back to the spiritual world. Krishna's own desire to reunite with the living entity. And Krishna helps. He realizes that this experience is in some ways beyond our ability to control and fathom. He realizes it's so difficult. And so he helps. He helps by placing himself in the mind, in the vision of the devotee, so that the devotee can remember Krishna in some way. Krishna will put himself in front of the devotee so that the devotee cannot help but remember Krishna. And this is the Lord's special mercy. This is the Lord's special kindness. We see this, of course, in the example of great devotees like Bhishmadev. Krishna personally appeared, and Bhishmadev appreciates this so much. He tells Krishna, my dear Lord, you're so merciful that you decided to come to me at my moment of death. If you knew I was dying, you decided to come. But many devotees, they have this experience. And Krishna kind of placing himself in some way or another, either by the presence of a devotee or the presence of his deity form, or simply in the mind's eye, so that a person cannot help but remember Krishna. Or they go through some coma or some difficult situation, and the only thing that's stuck in their mind is the mantra. And somehow they get stuck, and they're not consciously trying to remember it, but it's there. And it's rotating, it's cycling. So Krishna, he helps very much. He helps us at this moment of death. And it's this combination of sincere lifetime effort on our part and the mercy of Krishna on the other hand. That these two things put together, we can feel fairly certain that Krishna will help us at the moment of death. We can feel fairly certain about this point, that Krishna will guide us, he will help us at the moment of death. Now, a devotee, because he or she realizes the difficulty of remembering Krishna at the time of death, Prabhupada is saying here, a devotee prays to Krishna to leave this body when they are in sound physical and mental health. King Kulashekara, his prayer is so beautiful here. He's saying, at the moment of death, how will I remember you? Smaranam putaste. How will this memory of you come when kanthavarodham? My throat is stuck. It's full of mucus and bile, and I can't make any sound. How will I chant your holy name? How will I remember you in that time of physical suffering? And therefore he says, agyaivame vishatu madasira. He said, let it happen today, again. Now imagine, think of that. How many of us can come to Krishna and sincerely pray like this? Please, Krishna, let me die today. But that's really the test of whether we're ready for death or not. But if we can actually come to Krishna and sincerely pray, Krishna, let it happen today. I'm ready. And Prabhupada said, Prithu Maharaj, he knew his time of death was coming, and therefore he became very jubilant, very happy. Isn't that completely contradictory? Like, how many people do we know who become jubilant knowing that their time of death is arriving? But that's the test, right? That's when we really know we're ready for death. Is when we're so excited to meet death, we can't wait. Let it happen today, please, please, today. Okay, maybe tomorrow. But today, if possible. That kind of excitement. Of course, that's not a result of depression, right? These are not suicidal thoughts that the devotees are having. That's completely something very different. Because that's a result of feeling that life is worthless. It's a result of being pulled down. This is a result of being pulled up. Feeling that life is so wonderful, right? But cannot wait to join Krishna again. That desire is so strong. It's so intense. I'll give you one example. Perhaps I've given this in the past. But it's my own experience, my first experience seeing this kind of process firsthand was when my grandfather on my mother's side of the family, he passed away. This was about 5 or 6 years ago. I had been visiting India at that time and was just kind of making a regular visit to his home in Allahabad in Prayag, which is where my mother's side of the family is from. And visiting, and just kind of a normal visit, and arrived after a long train journey, came. A couple days passed, and I was having a nice time. Grandfather was there, grandmother, and uncle and aunt, and so forth. Until one day, it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, I heard my uncle shouting at the top of his lungs, Ravi, Ravi, is the name they know me by, before Isha. Ravi, Ravi, come here, Ravi. And then calling his wife, Shoba, come here. Just shouting and shouting. And you know, in Indian families, people often, they shout like this all over the place. So, I didn't take it too seriously at first. And then I thought, he won't stop shouting. And it's not like my uncle to shout for me like that. So I thought, okay, better go. And ran, and there was shocked to find my grandfather lying on the floor of the, you could say the living room, but it was kind of like an open courtyard almost. One side is completely open, but it's covered on the top. He was lying there on the ground. And his son, my uncle, was in a state of panic. And I said, oh my God, I don't know what's happened. We don't know what's happened. My grandfather had been a heart patient. He had been through one heart attack already and survived that. And so everyone guessed that this was some kind of a heart problem. But they thought it might be something else also. No one quite knew. And so my uncle, as soon as he saw me come, he said, you stay here. And he ran off to look for my father's medicine. You know, for heart patients, they keep this medicine. If you put it under the tongue, it kind of instantly solves the problem. And so he ran looking for this medicine. And normally he keeps it in the car in case they're traveling, or in his always in the pocket of his trousers, or in his bedroom. My uncle looked in all three of those places and didn't find it. And normally it's always there. All three of those places, today he could not find it. The whole family ran around trying to look for this. In the meantime, I was there with my grandfather. Everyone had disappeared. And his condition was worsening. He was shaking and so forth. And I wasn't sure exactly what was happening, whether this was what kind of a problem it was, but it didn't look very good. And so I placed his head on my lap, and I thought, okay, you know, this is the moment. I have to try to help him. If this is the moment, and if it's not, then there's no harm. And so I started chanting very loudly into his ear, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And then intersperse that with statements in Hindi. Krishna ko yaad kijiye, Krishna ko yaad kijiye. Please remember Krishna, please remember Krishna. Focus on Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And upon my repeated insistence, his mouth started to move, distinctly in the form of the Mahamantra. The Mahamantra has a certain repetitive movement that you can notice. At least that's the way it seemed to me. And I kept kind of pressing and pressing. And finally, he took his last breaths. Now, I don't know if you remember in Bhagavatam it's described that a person at the moment of death takes these three last breaths. And the sound that emanates from these three last breaths is cannot compare it to anything else. It's a completely different. You know when you hear that sound that this is the sound of the living entity leaving the body. Because there's nothing like that. When I heard it, I knew. I never heard it before, but I knew that, okay, this is it. This is what I read about. It's not anything like I've heard before. And there were three of them. He took his three breaths and left his body. Just after he left his body, the whole family arrived. The doctor arrived from nearby and so forth, and everything kind of fell into place. It was too late. He had left. Now, later on, we were reflecting on just how fortunate his passing away was. My grandfather lived a life that was, in terms of Varnashram practice, was very ideal in that he went through the various stages of life in a very, very dharmic fashion, very, very proper fashion. And he had his regular sadhana. Every morning he'd wake up very early and he'd chant 16 rounds of the Mahamantra and he'd worship the deities. And he performed some yogic practice. And he was above, up before anyone in the family. When his time of death arrived, he would wake up 3:30 every morning. When the time of his death arrived, he had already chanted all his rounds for the day. He had taken a bath, completely clean. He had chanted all his rounds for the day. He had performed his yoga practice. He had just gone into the temple room to wake up the deities, and was coming out of the temple room with a plate to pick flowers from his garden. And he fell right outside the door of the temple room. That's the situation, that's the place in which this happened. It is said that the most fortunate place to leave one's body is on the ground. That's the most auspicious way to leave one's body. If a person doesn't die on the ground, then in Vedic culture, you immediately place that body on the ground as soon as they passed away. It is said that it is most auspicious to leave the body in a lonely situation without any of one's family members. If you read in the Shastras, every great soul tries to leave before leaving this body. Leave home, leave family, leave friends. Krishna arranged it such that no one was there. No one was there. No family members, no one calling out to him. Everyone was busy looking for a doctor and medicines and so forth. The only thing he was hearing was the Mahamantra. Right around that courtyard where he fell was planted a whole row, circle of tulsi plants. And in the courtyard of his house, he used to keep a cow, and the cow was present as well. Everything was perfect, everything was ideal. And he didn't plan this, no one planned it, but Krishna planned it. Krishna planned it for him. And I happened to be just visiting at that time. Of all the times of the year, I was there for literally 5 or 6 days in the city of Allahabad. And that's when it happened. So that there was someone there to chant for him. According to various Puranas, it is said that one of the most auspicious passings is to have the son of your daughter present while you die. Why that's the case, I'm not exactly sure. But somehow this is said in the Puranas, like the Garuda Purana and so forth. And that too he had. So in every way, and then one can continue, his cremation ceremony, when that took place, a cow showed up and circumambulated his pyre and so forth. I used to hear these things for other devotees passing and so forth. But, I don't know, never really took it so seriously. I never really understood so seriously. Until I saw every step happen with my own eyes. Every step happen with my own eyes. And it was the most powerful experience of my life.
to be able to see. I kind of realized, yeah, this is what the Bhagavata means. Ante Narayana Smriti. Right? This is the evidence of a successful life, is being able to remember Krishna at the time of death. And if somehow that could happen, right, for us, that we would leave in such auspicious circumstances, then how wonderful would it be? His grandmother, his mother, my father's, my mother's grandmother, also passed away in a similar circumstance. She was up on the roof of her home, picking tulsi leaves for Krishna. She used to offer many, many tulsi. She was doing this particular fast in some month, I forget. I don't know if it was Gargi or not, but it was a month in which she decided to offer 108 tulsi leaves to Krishna every day. And she would pick these handfuls of tulsi leaves. And she passed away, she died, on the roof, amongst the tulsi leaves, holding these tulsi leaves in her hands. And no one knew until they went looking for her. So, in other words, for me, when I hear such departures of devotees, it increases my faith in Krishna consciousness so much that the process actually works. These things cannot happen by coincidence. Krishna is actually there to help us at the moment of death, if we're willing to pursue this practice of Krishna consciousness sincerely. He makes up what we lack. Right? We try this much in life, and we have to get there. So Krishna, he reaches down and he makes up the difference. And he'll do that for us because he's very kind. As long as we try to do this much, right? We do our share of the effort, then Krishna covers the rest. He helps us with the rest. He reaches down and tries it. And the entire process of Varnashram, of the ashramas, is meant for this purpose. From Brahmacharya to Grihastha to Vanaprastha to Sannyas. Is basically the entire Prabhupada describes that the entire Vedic civilization, the entire process of life in Vedic civilization is meant simply to prepare one for the moment of death. One begins life in a restricted fashion, as in Brahmacharya. Then one goes on to live life in a regulated fashion, as in Grihastha. Finally, one retires from that life, as in Vanaprastha. And finally, renounces everything, gives up the world. Gradually, beginning with a taste of renunciation, allowing some taste of sense enjoyment, gradually giving that up, giving that up, giving that up. So that we can also one day, right, pass away in such a circumstance, in such a wonderful manner, free of any kind of torments. This is why everyone from Dhritarashtra to Vishnadeva left home and desired, one day, I give up my material body in the manner of a yogi. Mind is healthy, body is healthy, everything is concentrated upon Krishna. And none of us have control over this, but Krishna, he has control over this, and he arranges things for his devotees. And he promises this in the Gita. Says, my devotee doesn't have to worry about how and when they pass away. As long as they engage in devotional service, then I'll take care of that final exam for them. So, how about one question, if there is one?
I have a question, but I just wanted to add something to the formula. Because Srila Prabhupada told us, he said, if you practice as I've taught you, then I will come at the moment of death and remind you of Krishna. And he also told us that Jagtap Maharaj tells the story the nicest, because he's quite animated. He was there, and he said that Prabhupada said, so if you can become 90% Krishna conscious, then I'll give you the other 10%. And gradually, the number went down until he said, okay, just 70%. If you can remember Krishna, just 70%, then I'll be there again.
Thank you. That's a very, very important point. That mercy of Krishna comes by way of the spiritual master. Right? It's very much the spiritual master who does this handing down, this reaching down, rather, and pulling us up towards him. Okay, I apologize that I didn't leave any further time for questions, but we'll end at that point. Thank you all very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.